My name is Tanisha Bernus. I am a third-year medical student at the Warren Alpert Medical School at Brown University. I currently serve on the ASA Medical Student Component Governing Council as member at large. I'm joined here today by Dr. Ed Mariano as a part of our subspecialty interview series. Dr. Mariano, it's so nice to have you here with us today. Could you please just tell us a little bit about yourself, your education background, your training background, in addition to what you currently do?
Great. Well, thank you, Tanisha. Thanks for the invitation to be part of the series. I think it's fantastic. It's never too early to learn more about anesthesiology. So I've been practicing now out of training since 2004. So I guess I'm coming up on 17 years post-fellowship training in anesthesiology. And I guess by all estimates, I'm probably just past the midpoint for the average physician career, which is estimated to be about 30 years. But I have to tell you that what we do is amazing. It just keeps getting better and better. It's never boring. And it flies by. I mean, I have to tell you that I'm probably more excited about being an anesthesiologist now than I was when I first started my very, very first job as an attending in 2004. I did medical school at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and I was there from 95 to 99. This happens to be match week, of course, and so on Twitter I shared my match day photo when I found out that I'd matched for anesthesiology residency at Stanford, which was my first choice. I stayed in D.C. for internship before coming back. I did a 1+3. And so in 2000, I started a residency at Stanford, and I was there until 2003. And in my last year, I was chief resident. I didn't actually know what a subspecialty I wanted to do. To be honest, when I was going through residency in anesthesiology, there were many job opportunities to enter the field right after residency training. At one point, I thought I wanted to be a cardiac anesthesiologist, and then I rotated on critical care, and then I thought I was going to be an intensivist, and then I remember rotating on obstetric anesthesia, and I thought, you know, this is really cool, and then I rotated on pediatrics, and I loved it. I actually filled in extra pediatric months as they became vacant when I was a chief resident. And then actually a good friend of mine who is still a pediatric cardiac anesthesiologist at Stanford, he actually convinced me to do peds. And part of the reason I think that happened was because even though I liked regional anesthesia at the time going through residency, there were no regional anesthesia fellowships in California. Actually, there was only one on the West Coast at Virginia Mason. And regional anesthesia back then in the early 2000s was not what it is now. We didn't use ultrasound. There weren't that many blocks really to learn or master. We didn't have continuous catheters. Regional anesthesia was distinct and separate from pain, so there weren't really mature acute pain services. And so by the time I got through my second year of residency, I actually felt like I could do, in general, the basic peripheral nerve blocks that a general anesthesiologist would use in practice. So it was actually my friend Calvin that convinced me to do peds, because he said, you know, you could apply regional anesthesia in kids if you were so motivated as a pediatric anesthesia fellow. And so that's what I did. So I actually did a peds fellowship, and I haven't done any subspecialty training in regional anesthesia.
Okay. Thank you for sharing a little bit about your story. Can you tell us what initially drew you to the field of anesthesia?
Yeah, so I think one thing I always was very impressed by with regional anesthesia was just how powerful it is to observe a patient having an awake surgery. I just think it's just so fascinating. As fascinating as general anesthesia is, the idea of anesthetizing a selective part of the body, just interrupting sensation, for the duration of time that the local anesthetic acts, I think it is still to this day, every time we do it, I think is just incredible. And then I think when I started to think about what the implications of regional anesthesia could be, especially in terms of medical care, the idea that you could extend local anesthetic duration, that you could titrate and personalize the duration and the intensity with infusions, which is what I got into later. I think that really changed my perspective. I think it really became much more like personalized medicine as opposed to just techniques. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what I liked about it. I had to learn a lot, I think, when I was a resident, just trying to do regional anesthesia, just because we didn't have a regional anesthesia rotation when I was at Stanford at the time that was truly dedicated to just learning blocks. You were just assigned rooms with cases that could be amenable to peripheral nerve block, but you've really had to hustle to try to get those that block experience in. And I remember having a very early experience with a visiting clinical faculty member. These were usually private practice anesthesiologists who would volunteer their time to attend in the Stanford operating room so they could have the experience of teaching residents. And I remember I had a great list of hand cases one day with this one attending. And by the end of the day, we hadn't done any nerve blocks. And so he asked me, well, how do you think our day went? And I said, well, you know, I thought it went great. Our cases went fine, but I thought we would do more blocks. And so yeah, he asked me what seemed like a very simple question. Well, did you call them last night? And I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, in private practice, he's like, you call your patients the night before, so that way you don't have to waste all that time like you wasted today talking to patients about regional anesthesia. He said, you should spend more time doing regional anesthesia and less time talking about regional anesthesia. And so it really gave me some context as to how to set up systems. And so as a resident, every time I had an assigned list that I thought, you know, were good cases for nerve blocks, I routinely would call those patients the night before, usually before I would call my attending. And so that's kind of a nice trick for all the future residents out there, is that if you talk to your patients ahead of time and you come up with the plan, and then you call your attending later on and you say, you know what, I've already spoken to the patients and this is what we've agreed to. And it's a little harder to change their mind.
Right. It's definitely something that all of us future residents and any residents listening will have to write down. And so what does your day-to-day schedule look like? As I said, you're primarily, or you're fellowship trained in pediatric anesthesia, but how do you integrate, I guess, your passion for regional anesthesiology into your day-to-day?
Yeah, so in my first job, I worked for 6 years at UC San Diego, and I was hired there because of my pediatric fellowship training. It just turned out that the majority of my clinical practice was adult anesthesia, and I would still, the pediatric anesthesia that I would, you know, that I really took care of at the time was mostly neonatal emergencies and kids who were admitted to the county's only burn unit at UCSD Hillcrest, and so the occasional kids who would have hand surgery in our outpatient surgery center. And so when I was there, one of the sites that I really enjoyed working in was outpatient surgery. And I worked with two hand surgeons, a foot and ankle surgeon, and a sports surgeon on a very regular basis, week to week. And so we established, I think, a really good trusting relationship that allowed us to really grow our practice. They didn't really know me because I had trained somewhere else and then showed up as the only non-UCSD trained junior faculty member. And I did some things that were a little different. And I learned some lessons while I was in residency at Stanford, like calling my patients. That really made a big difference. And so I would always, you know, offer patients, you know, the opportunity to have a block and avoid general anesthesia, especially for surgeries where they didn't need it. And little by little, I earned those surgeons' trust. And I think, you know, over the course of a few weeks, for my first few weeks as an attending, I found myself asked by the residency director if I would teach residents on a rotation. And so as a brand new first year faculty member, I started to have one resident a month that I would teach regional anesthesia. And I remember at a junior senior faculty dinner at our clinical director's house, I remember one of the senior anesthesiologists at the time at UCSD, John Benioff, he actually came up to me, and I, of course, knew who he was. You know, he wrote the difficult airway algorithm for the ASA. And he said, you know, I've been hearing some good things about what you're doing in regional anesthesia. I know that's not really what you came here to do, but maybe you should keep doing it. And I thought, wow, you know, well, that sounds like good advice. So so I really stuck with it. And I still continue to practice pediatric anesthesia part-time for about 4 more years after that. And then in 2010, I moved back up to Northern California. And so I've been here as a chief of anesthesiology at the VA hospital since 2010. So now my career as a pediatric anesthesiologist officially ended when I joined the VA.
Right.
But since I've been here, we've developed a great regional anesthesia program and fellowship. I started the fellowship in regional anesthesia when I was at UCSD. And at the time, as I mentioned, there were no fellowships in regional anesthesia in the state. So that was the first year-long fellowship in regional anesthesia established in California. And then when I came here, we developed the fellowship here at Stanford. And then when the time came, about 3 years after I started here, we decided as a group of fellowship directors that we needed to look at accreditation. And so I was put in charge of seeking accreditation for all fellowships in regional anesthesia through the ACGME. And so we did that. And so now we're one of 35 accredited regional anesthesia fellowships.
Yeah, wow, that's really awesome that you have been such a pillar, honestly, in helping regional anesthesia to become accredited and, you know, helping to really just provide that care for patients, which I feel like can often be overlooked when people think about anesthesiology. But as you mentioned, there are so many perks and so many things that really just help with that overall care and like that overall pain management, even just in the perioperative setting, as opposed to chronic pain.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you like the most about regional anesthesia? And is there anything that you don't like as much?
I would say, one of my favorite things about regional anesthesia is actually the teamwork. Even when I think about the very early part of my career when I was at UC San Diego, being able to work, regional anesthesia only works when it works as a team. The way that we would design the flow of patients, how we would work with our nurses in the preoperative area and PACU to expedite the preparation of patients for surgery, so that way we could get to them and make sure they had access to nerve blocks that wouldn't slow down their surgeries. Working with surgeons, earning their trust, I think coming up with pathways that really improve patient care, and also to make sure that it's available, I think, for every patient, because I think that was always a challenge, I think, for surgeons who historically have been resistant to regional anesthesia. It's always difficult when you know that it's a higher level of care, but it's not available for all your patients. So you really have to force yourself to look at the system and what it and how many people and how many parts it takes to make it work. And so that part of it, I think, is really exciting to me. I mean, of course, the procedures are great, and I think they do keep evolving. I think that being someone who didn't learn regional anesthesia with ultrasound, I had to learn ultrasound on my own. So I think that aspect, I think, of a specialty that is constantly growing and evolving, I think is also exciting. And we still have more tools that are starting to emerge. I think with ultrasound, we found new sites for depositing local anesthetic that offer alternatives to more traditional forms of regional anesthesia, like neuraxial blocks. We also have new modalities that we have to offer, like novel pharmacologic agents, and then even newer therapies and newer interventions that may not use local anesthetics at all. And so I think that aspect is probably a close number two, I think, to the team aspect. Is there anything that I don't like? No, there's nothing I don't like about regional anesthesia.
That's great. It shows that you've gone into the right fields. The right subspecialty for you.
One cool thing about regional anesthesia I've just observed, I've been at this, I mentioned, since training for almost 17 years, and regional anesthesia has come up at various times for very different reasons. And I remember in the mid-2000s, in the beginning of my career, it was really a big push for more outpatient surgery, more freestanding surgery centers, the resistance to admit patients for surgeries that really should be same day, the trying to avoid the costs of having patients come back to the ER or have to get admitted for pain. And so regional anesthesia is very attractive for that. And then I think that we saw soon after that, really the push for enhanced recovery. And so that was a big wave, I think, that started in Europe and then really moved over to the United States, coming up with protocols that improve early mobility for patients who have pretty big surgeries. and trying to tailor pain control so that way patients are less sedated, that they have faster return of bowel function. All of these things pointed to regional anesthesia again. And then, of course, more recently in the last decade or so, we've had much more emphasis on non-opioid analgesic therapy because of the opioid epidemic. And this fairly old technique of regional anesthesia, depositing local anesthetics close to the site of pain or near the site of surgery, it really rose up again. And so, I mean, even during the COVID pandemic, there were arguments, at least within the anesthesia community, to try to avoid aerosolizing procedures like intubation and extubation. And there were strong proponents of regional anesthesia due to the COVID-19. And so, I mean, already those are four different examples of I guess, pushes for regional anesthesia just in a short time.
Right. And so it sounds like regional anesthesia is really a growing field, but would you consider it, I guess, a popular subspecialty, or would you say that there's still more work to be done and that it's more so in like the development phases still?
I would say it's popular. I think that the number of, when I look at the number of fellowship programs in at least within the United States, or if we include Canada, because we include all of those programs on the Azure website, there are over 80 programs for fellowship after residency, with over 200 fellowship positions in North America, which I think is, I mean, compared to what it used to be, when I started my fellowship at UCSD, there were about a dozen programs. Mm-hmm. So that's a really rapid rise of training programs, and then with that, a rapid rise in fellowship positions. I think if you consider some context, there are about 1,800 residency positions in anesthesiology. So I think for a relatively new accredited subspecialty, we've only had accredited fellowship programs since 2017. And the fact that we have 200 of those are fellows who are, pursue regional anesthesia, I think shows that there is some demand. I think that the skills involved, I think, are right now highly sought after in various types of practices. And I think as a fellowship director, I think that it's always very reassuring when I'm trying to help our fellows find jobs to have a lot to choose from. Mm-hmm. And I regularly get contacts by email or by text from either heads of practices, either in foundation-based practices like Kaiser or private practices or academic centers, looking for our fellows, seeing what they're going to do and asking whether they have jobs secured already.
That's really amazing. And just in general, what is the value in pursuing a fellowship?
I mean, I think that don't get me wrong. I think that the general residency training in anesthesiology, that there's a reason why that really forms the foundation of our clinical skill. It's important that like every resident really take that very limited time and make the most of it, because really, like, you, by the time you, even if you decide to pursue a fellowship, you want to be as well-rounded and as well-trained as a general anesthesiologist as possible before you even pursue your fellowship training. I think what fellowship really offers is feel like it offers you an area of clinical expertise for which you can really sink your teeth into that, and you can really be an expert in one particular area. And that can be extremely gratifying, especially from if you're looking at that the 30-year career perspective, being an expert, being a consultant in a subspecialty area to your partners, especially within an anesthesiology group or department, a resource person for referring services, someone who offers that type of specialty expertise to help others in their patient care, I think is super gratifying. I also think that from an academic or from an innovation perspective, I think that having that subspecialty allows you to really see where the gaps are, because anesthesiology touches almost every other medical specialty, it's fairly broad. And so sometimes it's challenging to find those areas for improvement that you really want to work towards for your whole career. But really focusing in an area, you know, whether your main interest is clinical practice or clinical excellence or scholarship in the more traditional sense of research or improvement, you know, looking at systems and how to make things better, you know, for patients. Or teaching. I think that if for any of those areas, I think that having a specific niche, I think really makes a difference in terms of helping you grow and then have something more to offer others.
Right. And for the medical students listening, are there any resources that they could use to learn a little bit more about regional anesthesia?
Yeah, so I think the subspecialty society for regional anesthesia is the American Society of Regional Anesthesia and Pain Medicine. There are a variety of different resources available, some of which we made available free. I used to chair communications for ASRA, and so one of the big things that I wanted to do was not firewall everything. So if you're curious, I think about what the people are like and what they're passionate about, check out the How I Do It section on the ASRA website. These are curated newsletter articles that started years ago when we used to do all of our newsletters in print format. Mm-hmm. But we basically asked the experts, like, how do you do it? And these ended up being extremely popular articles amongst members and non-members, to the point where they're still like one of the highest searched article subtypes on the ASRA website. Because sometimes you can't put everything you do into a journal article. But you really want to know, like as a clinician, like I want to know, like how does this person who came up with this particular technique or management mm-hmm. strategy, how do they do it in real life? And so yeah, those are really fun to read. So I would definitely direct you to check those out, and they're all available free.
Okay, that's great to hear. And lastly, what advice do you have for our like budding anesthesiologists and those considering anesthesiology as a specialty?
So I think that when we started, when we first started talking, I think one of the things that I'm very fortunate to have experienced, I think, in my early medical career was doing that rotation, that really sinking myself into an anesthesiology rotation. Had I not done that in that July of my fourth year,
right.
Right before I was scheduled to do my my highly competitive sub-I and ENT, I might have ended up doing ENT. So definitely make the time to do a rotation. And I think in that rotation, probably the best experience that I had was really working with attendings one-on-one. So mm-hmm. however, if you have that opportunity where you can work with attendings one-on-one, I think what really changed my point of view as a medical student was trying to put myself in the position of being a resident, and what would that be like?
Mm-hmm.
Getting in early, setting up my room, greeting the patient, talking to the patients before and after surgery, being available for everything, and not just the procedures, just staying mm-hmm. for the anesthetics and just learning about what it's like to be an anesthesiologist. It's really helpful. Sometimes it's hard when you're one or two degrees removed, you know, when you're paired up with a resident and then maybe that resident has another, has an attending. And that makes it a little bit difficult because it's hard to get really into that mindset. But I think that when it's really you and an attending, you can get a little bit more of a picture about what it's like to be an anesthesiologist, because I think that the best anesthesiologists make it look like they're not doing anything. So much of it is mental, and it's anticipating. It's really knowing what's going to happen next, understanding so many different types of surgeries, knowing what the patient experience is going to be like from so many other patients you've taken care of who've had something similar, and then preparing. So that way, everything you do is intentional. Those experiences, I think, are really meaningful as a student. And I think that you'll find that if you can get that experience now before residency, then you'll just keep building on that as a resident and then throughout your career.
Right.
Because I think that it's really key.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a boring specialty at all.
Yes, anesthesia definitely has so much to offer. Well, I just want to thank you again for joining us today, for sharing your story and giving us an idea about what regional anesthesia is about. It was a pleasure to have you.
It's pleasure is mine. Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's really an honor to be part of this.
Thank you.